We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
It's magic. The one and only Vince D'Addario is with us now. Are you ready for rapid fire?
Been waiting all day, let me tell you.
I bet you have. And I mean, you know, I hope you're ready for rapid fire since you were brought specifically here for rapid fire.
So it's kind of exciting to be brought in just for rapid fire.
I know. It's kind of like the closer coming in out of the bullpen. You need like entrance music or something.
Need like an Enter Sandman action.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Timmy Trumpets or, you know, like something. I don't know.
Oh, is that the?
Yeah, that's right.
I like that one.
All right. Well, we finally got our first transfer portal. First since the Blue Gold game, anyway. Transfer portal news for Notre Dame today. Micah Bell, rising sophomore corner, announced that he is entering the portal. Scale of 1 to 10. How significant is this, Vince, for Notre Dame?
So I want to answer this two ways.
Okay.
For 2024, it's like a 3 or 4. For 2025, I feel like it's a 7 or 8.
Okay.
Because, you know, Michael Bell wasn't going to start this year. You know, Jordan Clark was brought in to be the nickel. He's going to be the nickel, you know, 90% of the time, right? And the whole point was that Michael Bell was going to be his understudy and kind of train him up so that he'd be ready to take over so they wouldn't have to go back to the transfer portal next year. And Michael Bell would just assume that position and maybe have 2 or 3 years of eligibility left over, ready to roll. Now you've got to have a new plan for the nickel moving forward, right? So it doesn't really affect this year specifically, but I feel like it affects next year and beyond a little bit more. It surprised me. I felt like, you know, talking to Brian and talking to some other people, it felt like they kind of had a plan all set up with how the nickel position was going to look this year moving forward. And now that just kind of got blown up.
And this wasn't one of the names that was on my radar that I thought was probably coming. Like this one specific, because especially like when you look at Clarence Lewis announcing he was leaving a couple of weeks ago, it felt like Micah Bell probably, you know, sort of like his presence, you know, like what you're talking about with the nickel, some different things like that. Like it felt like that had something to do with it. You know, Clarence Lewis going to go to Syracuse. Probably he'll get more playing time at Syracuse than he's going to have here. Like in terms of a long-term play for Clarence, you know, like that's another story, but you know, long-term play for Clarence Lewis still feels like, you know, does he really have an NFL future? That kind of thing. But the nickel specifically, I think the recent developments there might have had something to do with that as well in terms of Micah Bell. And I'll play you this snippet Marcus Freeman, after the blue gold game Saturday, was asked about the young linebackers and kind of that linebacker room going forward. Here's part of what he said, or to that bigger conversation, but specific to Jaden Osbury.
Osbury would be able to say, okay, he's helping us at linebacker, but we got to find ways to not take him off the field. So we moved him to nickel halfway through spring. And so that's a reflection of his athleticism, his versatility. So
you move Jaden Osbury to nickel halfway through spring, and some of the unintended consequences, I think, impacted what you were talking about in terms of the future for Micah Bell. I rate this a lot higher for me. I put it at a 9 simply because, I mean, the numbers at this position right now, they were already thin even before Micah Bell announced he was going to leave, and now they're even thinner. So currently, they're down to 4 scholarship cornerbacks on the roster. One of them, their best one, Benjamin Morrison, has a shoulder injury. Yeah, I mean, he's literally walking. He's still in an immobilizer sling, which means he's not moving that shoulder at all, which means he is still in the recovery phase. Yeah. Like, he's not even to the rehab phase yet. He is in the recovery phase. So, like, we have no idea what Benjamin Morris's status is going to be for training camp, let alone the season. So, right as of right now, you're down to Jaden Mickey, Christian Gray, Chance Tucker in terms of the healthy scholarship cornerbacks right now. Now, you do have Carson Hobbs and Leonard Moore coming in this summer. Hobbs had a thumb surgery fairly recently that he's rehabbing from. You would hope that a thumb is not going to, you know, severely limit him by the time training camp gets here. And, of course, you've got, you mentioned Jordan Clark as well. But the numbers are very thin right now. And that's why I put this at a 9, especially, you know, again, not, you know, maybe Notre Dame has an idea of, you know, what Benjamin Morrison's actual hopeful return date is. I'm still putting that, like, if they get him back by training camp, just based on, you know, shoulder experiences and all that kind of stuff that you like, that I know that I had when I had my shoulder done. We don't, you know, like we still don't know exactly what the Benjamin Morrison, you know, injury was and what the return date is, but corner was already to me a big priority in the transfer portal. They had that Rice cornerback, Trayshawn Devones, I believe his name is, you know, he came in last week. I think they're going to have to bring in it, try to get at least 2 corners in the portal now.
Yeah. One felt like a need 24 hours ago. And now you're not wrong. I mean, he's part of that cornerback depth, and you know, he was playing some corner on Saturday, and you're probably right. I'm probably underselling how important this is from a depth standpoint. I was just thinking from a nickel standpoint, you know what I mean?
Sure.
But from a corner standpoint, thank goodness they've got 2 corners coming in. They're going to be true freshmen, but how much do you really want to put on those 2 freshmen?
I mean, well, exactly. Like, I feel confident about the front end guys. No problem. You know, again, like Benjamin Morrison, my only, and I think anyone would probably agree with it, the only thing you're not confident in Benjamin Morrison, we don't know when he's going to be back. We don't know what his recovery is going to look like. And I think you're kind of like if you're relying right now on Benjamin Morrison being ready for Texas A&M, that seems to me like it's, you know, based on, you know, recovering from a shoulder surgery and, you know, being, you know, it's one thing just to recover from it and have, you know, your range of motion and some kind of strength, but it's another thing when you throw football into the mix, you know, the ability to, you know, confidently raise your arm up and swat a pass away you're going to fall on it and not re-injure it. Yeah, that's exactly right. There's a lot that's going to go with that. So I'm just, you know, again, if the front end guys stay healthy, that's great, but you're still going to have to rotate at time, you know, just to give guys a breather from time to time. And the depth right now is just dramatically thin.
You need 4. Like, you absolutely 100% need 4 corners that are going to play, right? You hope that, you know, you've got 3 for sure. Now, Chance Tucker, is he going to be that 4th? Or are you going to get somebody from the portal to be that 4th? Like, who's going to be the 4th? I think that's a question mark, right, moving forward. And then from the nickel position, I guess Jaden Osbury now is your backup nickel. So it makes you feel a little bit better about some things.
Yeah.
But still, the depth is an issue. I don't, you know, I guess the last 2 years Notre Dame has been very, very lucky, or if you want to call it, you know, the recruiting's been really good, right? So Benjamin Morrison as a freshman, really freaking good. Christian Gray as a freshman, really freaking good. Is the third time a charm? Like, are you hoping to cash in on a really good freshman again?
Right.
You know, that's
I mean, it could happen, but it's still an unknown right now. Because all these guys, no matter what their ratings are, everyone, as we've seen with other guys on the roster at different positions, it's not everyone makes that transition and is ready to go right away. It's a lot to bank on a freshman as good as, you know, any of them might be walking in the door, that they're going to be able to jump out there and go right away and significantly contribute on day one.
100%.
Because, like, even Benjamin Morrison took him a little time,
before he was inserted in. Yeah.
Yeah. Before it really 100%. Came during his freshman season. So, yeah, I'll be really curious to see what and I know a lot of people are already like counting scholarships and stuff like that. As we've talked about before, like, this is not the scholarship that you want to count. You know, it's like, we're one step closer to 85. That's going to take care of itself ultimately. Right. There's some other pieces that I think that are going to, matter more about getting to 85, because they've got to go out and add at least one, if not two, corners now at this position, plus a punter that we know that they're going to bring in.
Because I think we talked about it yesterday. I said I think six-ish guys are going to, not be part of the roster moving forward. Yeah. I still think six plus one six are not
others. Part of the roster.
You know what I mean? Like, I was not counting on a Michael Bell type to be leaving. So,
exactly.
Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's tournament season or the fight for playoff home court, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into some serious cash. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. We are the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you pick more than or less than on 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. You can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You heard it. 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with NBA, NHL, and college basketball entries today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. It is so easy to use. All you have to do is download the app in the App Store or Google Play Store, sign up, add some funds, and you're in. Then you just find your favorite player and decide more or less on the suggested stat. It really is that easy. The night I joined, I picked Hannah Hidalgo to have more than 14 points, Maddie Westbeld to have less than 10 rebounds, and Marcus Burton to have more than 18 points. And guess what? I hit on all three. Bing, bang, boom, baby. Money in my pocket. It was just that easy. Download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more. Pick less. It's that easy.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Now, another Micah, freshman receiver Micah Gilbert, capped a good spring with a big blue gold game. A pair of touchdown catches in the blue gold game for Micah Gilbert. Here's what Marcus Freeman had to say about him after Saturday's game.
Didn't surprise one bit. I mean, he's been, from summer camp, he's been a guy that has made plays. And this is when we evaluate him last year into to spring, the start of spring. Micah Gilbert's a really good football player, and he's added a great skill set to that room at a young age. And he's a hard worker, doesn't talk a lot. You know, he just goes out to work. And I saw his parents last night at the parent dinner and just said he's a pleasure to coach. And he's one of those guys that, you know, you just love being around because he's a yes or no sir guy and just works. And what you're seeing is a reflection of that work he's putting in.
So, Vince, what kind of impact do you expect Micah Gilbert to have as a freshman this season?
I think he's got every opportunity to make it to the end of the rotation, right? And we've heard that that rotation is going to be about six.
Correct.
It's funny how quick you get to six when you start counting up the wide receivers, right?
I know.
That has not been the case in the past. But before it was like hard to find three starters. But now that six fills up quick, but I think he has every opportunity to crack that six. And if that's the case, you know, he'll make his contributions and he'll, you know, have big catches here and there. And I don't think he's going to start. But I think he has an opportunity to play a decent amount. The best part about this is you don't need Micah Gilbert. At least I don't think they need Micah Gilbert. He's an epiphany. Like, he's extra credit. You know what I mean? Like, if he's in the rotation, that's extra. That's awesome. That's, you know, something great. I think they're in a great spot with their wide receivers where they don't need him to contribute, but I think he will.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you look, you know, like, Chris Mitchell is obviously going to be there. We still haven't seen Bo Collins yet, but right. I think we all expect that he's going to be in right. the mix. And then you've got Jaden Greathouse and Jordan Faison. So that gets you to four right there. So then you go beyond those guys, and you've got guys like the freshman. Well, K.K. Smith, you know, like, obviously he's a sophomore.
He's a redshirt freshman.
Redshirt freshman. But you got K.K. Smith. You've got Micah Gilbert. You've got Cam Williams. You know, I still don't know, like, what to expect of Jaden Harrison as a contributor, as a receiver. I still think he's going to be mostly a special teams guy. But then, obviously, you got Deion Colsey and Jaden Thomas, you know. So it's like there are going to be four guys, I think, who are really going to be vying for how that shapes up during training camp, especially since you didn't have Bo Collins in practice right. with you, you know, this spring. And I think that how Jaden Greathouse, like, what impact he has, not in the slot, because you got – of course, he and Faison there in the slot, but what impact Greathouse has as an outside receiver is probably going to go a long way toward determining, like, where sure. those freshmen do fit in, you know. But
yep,
I mean, I think if you look at projections, like, Jaden Greathouse had 18 catches and a little over 260 yards last year. So if you look at just straight up production, like, if Micah Gilbert is somewhere around there this year when it's all said and done, I think that's a pretty solid season for a freshman when you've got all those other guys, when you look at the depth of this receiver room that you didn't have a year ago.
Yeah, I'm counting it up right now. I mean, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9-ish wide receivers who I could make an argument should be in the top six. Like, mm-hmm. Notre Dame has not been in this position in a very, very long time, right? And it's a, like I said, it's a great problem to have. I mean, I could probably come up with the six depending on how you're doing stuff, but you get to six very quickly. And I think Micah Gilbert's going to make a big play here or there. I think he's going to make a game-changing catch or a big first down, you know, that kind of deal. I just don't anticipate him being, you know, making an impact as a starter, but I see him making an impact as a rotation guy.
Right. Exactly. And, like, his opportunities – could you know, and it, like, what it looks like, who knows, but his opportunities could come, like in those MAC games, that that would probably be his first opportunity, you know, really, whether it's Northern Illinois or Miami, Ohio. And I know people have said, well, you know, don't overlook Miami, Ohio. They won the MAC last year and all that kind of, but like those, you would think that those would be some of his first opportunities to sort of get out there on the field and then sort of see where it goes from there.
Yeah. He's going to make plays. I mean, there's no doubt about it. It's just a very, very deep room.
Exactly. Fill in the blank. Saturday's blue gold game was the most blank blue gold game you can remember.
Positively competitive. Positively competitive. Because there's been blue gold games that were competitive and low scoring, but they were, that wasn't necessarily a good thing. Mm-hmm. I think this was a good thing. I think you saw plays made by the defense. I think you saw plays made by the offense. I think, you know, you saw the athleticism of these guys. Like, there was a lot of positives to take away from the blue gold game with very few negatives, to be honest with you, very few negatives. And the positives greatly outweighed the negatives, and a bunch of touchdowns were scored. So that was fun to watch, obviously. And
more than we predicted, right?
Oh, 100%. And look, the defense was in a base defense. We were talking to one of the defensive players' parents before the game and basically said they've got like six calls, like total defensively. So you anticipate that touchdowns are going to be scored when you hear stuff like that. It makes perfect sense in a blue gold game.
Very vanilla, but, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, absolutely. Very vanilla. But defense still made plays when they needed to make plays, right? I mean, so I thought it was very positive, and it was competitive from start to finish. So teams were evenly matched. Touchdowns were scored, came down to the last drive, positively competitive.
That's interesting. You use competitive. I used another C word. Compelling was my word.
I like that.
I thought it was one of the more compelling blue gold games that really we've ever seen. You know, just, and I think the biggest reason why is still the three quarterbacks who were out there.
Oh, sure.
You know, they all played well. You know, it wasn't like last year where Hartman played, you know, really a pretty good game and we were excited to see Sam Hartman, but Tyler Buchner really did not have a good game at all out there. But because of the fact and the way they used those three quarterbacks with Carr going back and forth between the two teams and, you know, and Jelly obviously sticking with the blue, Minchie with the gold, like all three of them were factors in the game. And the fact that it was a competitive game until the end. And Angeli, you know, made the throw to Mitchell. Minchie made some plays with his legs. And CJ Carr was, you know, he was just good out there. Hit a couple throws that, you know, that kind of made everybody salivate a little bit. Didn't show any fatal flaws. So there was no real negative to come out of it. You know, people do still, I think, overlook the fact that he very easily could have been intercepted by Christian Gray. And I would be interested to see how we were talking differently about CJ Carr had Gray, you know, intercepted that ball. But it was just compelling because of those three and the fact that they all played well and that it was a close competitive game till the end. Just a very compelling game and not a stinker like a lot of blue gold games turn out to be.
Well, I mean, look, this is the best blue gold game from a quarterback standpoint that there's been in a long time, right? Yeah. I mean, I can't even remember back far enough to, you know, when it's been this compelling, to use your word, from a quarterback standpoint. I mean, and somebody said, you know, when Malik and Kizer were here, does anybody remember the spring game from 2015? Kizer was a disaster.
Yeah.
It was terrible.
Yeah.
Right? And then when Malik got hurt, everybody's like, oh, crap. Like, we're in trouble.
And I'm trying to remember, in 2016, Malik was obviously – now, he was ready to go by the 2016, you know, by the time that season started. I can't remember – if he was playing in the spring game, you know, in 2016 or not.
I think so. And then it was a quarterback competition. And then they eventually gave it to Kizer, obviously. Right. I assume they did.
They didn't give it to Kizer, remember, because they went into the 2016 season with both of them were going to be the quarterback.
That's right.
That was the first nail in Brian Kelly's coffin in 2016. Is he was trying to keep his word to Malik because he told Malik he was going to be the guy when he came back. But obviously, you know, when Malik was out for the rest of the 2015 season, Kizer took off.
Sure.
But then he went into 2016 trying to play both sides, and it was just a total disaster when he was trying to play both of them.
Beginning of the end.
Yeah.
I think I blocked most of that out for good reason.
I know. Seriously, I think we all did. I mean, that 2016 season was one to block out from the basically from the time it started. You know?
It was like awful. Because isn't that the season that started with the rain delay and that whole thing? Was that 2016? No.
No, that was 2011, actually. The South Florida game that you're thinking of, yeah.
Okay.
I think that was 2011 anyway, or was it even farther back than that? I don't know, man. That's
whatever. It is what it is. But you're right.
I mean, it was the Texas game, and, you know, they lost to Texas, you know, all that different stuff. You know,
it's just horrible. Yeah. It was horrible. All of it. Yeah.
Well, or did they beat Texas?
I just pulled it up. They lost to Texas in double overtime.
Right. That's what I was thinking. That's what I was thinking. And then
at Texas, and then beat Nevada at home.
Yeah.
Lost to Michigan State, lost to Duke.
But I think, wasn't that the year that it took them until like the middle of the season before they finally got a sack, you know, and all that stuff?
It was awful. I mean, they just got, even their wins were close. Like,
it was bad.
I mean, they only beat Miami by 3 at home. That they lost to Navy by a point.
Yep.
Like, he's just ugly.
Very ugly. Okay, Vince, fill in the blank. It is blank that NBC is going to put heart rate monitors on the parents of athletes competing at the Summer Olympics in Paris, and they're going to display those heart rate monitor numbers on the TV screen.
This is a terrible idea. This is a terrible idea. They're going to probably live stream somebody's heart attack is what's going to end up happening. Like, this is awful because, look, I'm the parent of an athlete. You're a parent of an athlete. I guarantee my heart rate is like, and I'm not just saying from like the suspense of it, like I'm out of shape. And so my heart rate would be a disaster to begin with. And
yeah, what's your normal heart rate going to be?
Right. Let alone watching my kid
walking
compete.
Around with like an, Vince is like sitting on the couch with an 80, you know?
Yeah, exactly. This is what I'm saying. Like, this is a horrible, horrible, horrible idea. Something bad is going to happen, and they're going to have it plastered all over it. Terrible idea.
I've gone back and forth on this. Like, do I like it? Do I think it's, I mean, like, do you remember, like 2 or 3 Olympics ago, the gymnasts and they're like the parents of the gymnasts and show them and they'd be like bobbing and weaving, you know, in their chair, moving around to all of her moves and all that. Different kind of stuff. I would just imagine that those two, like their heart rates were just through the roof. And I guess that what's your heart rate right now? Oh, 71. That's actually not bad. Because we're sitting here. You're not completely inactive because you're having a conversation. So that probably, you know, pumps it up.
I had to look because I wasn't sure.
Yeah. Like I, as much, you know, because I am anti continual cuts to the crowd, to the parents of athletes to begin with. You know, Olympics, maybe I'm a little bit, you know, like more sort of okay. I'm in line with that, but it's a little bit different. I don't know, you know, but like, you know, again, it's like, how many times do you need to show the, you know, the parents, you know, like fidgeting around in their seats and doing all the moves and all that different kind of stuff. And, you know, like you said, do we really need to know? Okay, it's like, okay, their heart rates go up because their kid is out there and they're nervous for their kid. So I don't know exactly, you know, how interesting that's going
to be. I would decline if I was a parent. I'd be like, that you don't need to have that information. Like,
you obviously have to give them your permission to do it. But at the same time, some of those parents are probably going to be very eager to do it because how many times do they have a chance to be on national TV? Because how many times, you know, is their kid going to have a chance to be an Olympian?
I mean, so I guess if you gave me the option, which obviously they're not doing, I'd rather be mic'd up than have a heart rate monitor on me. Yeah.
And I tell you, like, I was just thinking, you know, I realize it's not a sport that most people watch on TV, but like, you know, we've got a local Olympian who is a wrestler, Sarah Hildebrandt, who's
bronze
medalist at the last one. Yeah, that's right. He's the Penn wrestling coach out there, right, Harper?
Yeah, Coach Harper. I was like, man, you got another free trip to awesome place around the world. He's like,
hilarious.
It was funny. He goes, I hit the lottery with that one, didn't I? I was like, yeah, you did.
But like when Jesse wrestled in, you know, he didn't wrestle for a long time, but he wrestled in middle school.
Yeah.
And that's when I was, you know, because of my wrestling background, like that's when I was the most wound up was when was wrestling and, you know, like going through the whole thing and I'd be, you know, cause like, and you know, like I realize the decorum of parents has changed dramatically, like how you're supposed to act, you know, like in the stands. But like when we grew up at wrestling tournaments and stuff like that, it's like, that's how, you know, that's how you heard your coach and, you know, slash, you know, like, cause my dad had a, you know, he wrestled in high school as well. So that, like, that's how you heard him, you know, it's like you had to be loud, you know, to get over the crowd and all that kind of, but it's like, that's definitely when I was the most wound up. And that would be to me, one of the ones where I would think that the you know, like that heart rate is going to be jacked up the most, you know, because of that. No, but I don't know. I guess every sport's a little bit different. You know,
it'll be interesting to see because it's obviously your kid competing, right?
Right.
And you want your kid to be successful, and so your heart rate's going to go up. I mean, that's just going to happen. These
like
NBC knows it, right? I mean,
yeah, and it's part of the show for them, obviously.
Absolutely.
Like, do you remember Michael Phelps' sister? Like they would always cut to Michael Phelps' mom and sister, and this like those were the two. Like,
I remember
the
his mom. For sure.
The sister was just all over the place all the time. You know, so. I'm sure hers would have been through the roof. So Wrigley Field turns 110 years old today. What's the best Wrigley experience you've had in person?
So I went a bunch back when I had season tickets. And, you know, I was at the playoffs, you know, the whole Bartman thing and all that. But got to be honest with you, my first game was my best Wrigley experience. I'll never forget it. Walking out there. It was the 88 season. That was my first game. That was the season they put lights up for the first time.
I was going to say, I thought that was the season they put lights in there.
And I went with my uncle, who's a huge Cubs fan, lived in Chicago, you know, and he never had sons of his own. So it's like he would kind of adopt us and take us to sporting events and all that.
So you were like what, 7 or 8 years old?
Seven. Yeah, I was seven.
7 years old. Wow.
Yep. Yep. So that's the one I remembered just like walking out there and like how big it was. Cause I played little league, you know, T-ball, and it's like, you know, little the T-ball. You walk into a major league baseball stadium, and it's like, this is amazing. Like this is, you know. So I remember there's a picture that I have someplace of me sitting in the stands with my uncle and at the first game and all that. Like, that's the one I remember. That's the best one for me.
Yeah,
I went nostalgic on you.
Oh yeah, you did. I've actually got a picture up here on the wall of, you know, back when Jesse was smaller than me, you know, that's been a few years. I think it was our first game, but we've got, you know, it's got, you know, like a picture, he's on my shoulders and, you know, like the welcome to Wrigley Field, you know, on the outside of Wrigley Field in the background and all that kind of stuff.
Well, and that would be my second one was the first game I took my son to.
Right.
And we got a ton of pictures of that and he was like four, you know what I mean? So, yeah.
There was one, like in terms of the most memorable because I obviously didn't experience Wrigley Field, you know, like I was in my 30s the first time I experienced, but it was still a very cool experience. And it was actually like without, you know, like taking the whole family over there because it's like somebody got us tickets and I went with you know, somebody that I used to work with and all that kind of stuff. But the two most memorable ones, first one, Jesse was actually with me for both of them. It's been 20 plus years ago, but Sammy Sosa and Bobby Abreu, the Cubs were playing the Phillies, and each of those guys hit three home runs in that game. So it was like, you know, a three home run game is rare enough, and especially like when Sammy Sosa does it, but two, and like Abreu at the time was one of the more prolific, you know, hitters in baseball still at that point. So they both had a three home run game and it was like, you know, million runs. It was like a 15-14 game.
Oh, sure. I don't even
remember the score, but that was pretty cool. You know, like two guys to hit three home runs in the same game. And then the other one was game 7 of the NLCS. It was the game after the Bartman game in 2003, Jesse and I went. And Kerry Wood was the starting pitcher for the Cubs in that game. And I don't know if you remember, but he hit a home run relative. I think it was like his first at bat.
It was early.
The place was just electric. The place went
nuts. Oh, yeah.
I didn't think there was any chance the Cubs were going to lose that game when Kerry Wood hit that home run. But unfortunately, they did, and it took them, what, 13 more years before they finally hit their curse and get to the World Series. But those are the two most memorable things that I can remember happening at a Cubs nice. Game when I went to
Wrigley. That's awesome.
So that was pretty cool.
Awesome.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
All right, there is a new movie coming out called The Fall Guy. Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt. It's an adaptation of the 80s TV show about a Hollywood stuntman by the same name called The Fall Guy. I don't know if you're old enough to remember The Fall Guy back in the 80s. Scale of 1 to 10, what's your interest in this movie?
You know, it seems I saw a preview for it a couple of days ago, actually. I am admittedly a huge Emily Blunt fan. I think she's really good.
I am too.
She's really easy in the eyes. I think she's a good actress. Uh-huh. All of the above. And I like her husband too. He's obviously hilarious. I would go watch this. I will say my interest level is probably like a 5 or 6. Like, it's not like I'm going to be crushed if I don't make it to the theater. But if it's coming out and it's going to be, and I've got nothing going, like if I'm with my kid and we're at a soccer tournament or a football camp or something, and we're looking for something to do in the afternoon. This was something, if I was looking through the movies, I'd be like, you know what? Let's go see that one. That one looks like, because I think it's like, it's not a rom-com, but there's definitely some comedic, you know,
right,
points to it. You know what I'm saying? Like, right, that's the kind of movie I enjoy watching. Yeah. So.
I'm a big fan of the movie Edge of Tomorrow, the Tom Cruise, Emily Blunt movie. It's kind of a Groundhog Day, futuristic, you know, like combination, D-Day in the future kind of movie. It's a fun movie. Emily, so that's like one of my favorite Emily Blunt movies. I've never been like a huge Gosling guy, but have you seen, you know, like the clip from a couple weeks ago, the Beavis and Butthead on SNL?
Oh my goodness.
It's hilarious.
Yes. I was literally laughing out loud as I watched it. And it also just so happens that one of the two of them looks identical to a student here.
Oh, really?
Who I've had to deal with.
That's funny.
And it just makes it even funnier.
What hooked me, though, is like on the trailer that they've been showing for this movie, they've used the Journey song Any Way You Want It, like in there, which goes back to Caddyshack. You know, they played Any Way You Want It at the end of Caddyshack. But that kind of hooked me, and I learned it's actually got a couple decent reviews. So I'd put this at a solid 6.5, 7. I'm more interested after seeing a couple reviews. And like I said, they hooked me with the Journey song, basically. So,
okay, whatever it takes.
I find myself interested. I just thought,
is it coming out like now?
I want to say like maybe next weekend, not this weekend, but next weekend, something like that.
It's an odd time for a movie to come out, like in the middle.
I thought so too. And it's like, we're getting into May, so at least if it comes out in May, that's typically a decent sign. But
true, I could, you know, usually in the past, there's always been like Memorial Day weekend is like right, some of the blockbusters like go out. I haven't heard like what's coming out that weekend, but you know, maybe they should have pushed it a little bit. But
we always keep our eye out, and like it's tough, man. Movies over the last few years, it's just you don't know what you're gonna get.
I know, so. I know.
So that's why we might have to sample this.
And I know you guys, I mean, the Stiers family, you guys are moviegoers.
We are.
Yeah.
As much as possible.
As much as possible.
My wife is always looking. She's like, the no movies end. It's like, well, it's March. They're never
done March. I love going to the theater. I will see just about anything as an excuse to go to the theater.
Get your popcorn.
Get some popcorn. And just, I love going to the theater.
Yep.
There's just been nothing that has really floated my boat lately. So maybe this will do it.
I mean, literally, it's been what? Like almost 2 years since Top Gun Maverick? Has it been even longer? Like,
that was so good. I've watched that multiple times at home. you know, on streaming service.
It came on probably a couple months ago, even at this point, like on the satellite. And it's like, mm-hmm. Ooh, I saw that it was coming up. So I recorded it. So now I've got it like anytime, any way I want it, I can watch it.
Well done. Well done, sir.
I don't know though. I think we've talked about this before. You know, they're talking about another Top Gun sequel because that really? One did so well. And I'm torn on whether I want that because I feel there's nowhere to go but down on
see,
this, you know?
I don't know if there's such thing as like a perfect second movie, you know, perfect sequel.
Especially almost 30 years apart.
This one's dang close, man, because they had Iceman, which obviously they're not going to have in the next one.
Right.
You had the Rooster Goose story. Like, it was perfect, man. Like, it was
I feel like they're going to have to go back to the well and, like, bring in, you know, like, see if they can get some of the original pilots to come back in and work some kind of storyline in, or if they're going to do it. But,
man, I
think it's going to be tough to top, man. They even come
the only close. Part that was a stretch for me in the second movie was the fact that he's still, like, a captain or whatever and never either retired, got pushed out, or moved up.
There's not – if you're not advancing in rank,
right.
they push you out. You know?
Correct.
Like everyone else is an admiral and he's still a captain. I did find that kind of hard to believe as well.
That was the hardest pill to swallow on the whole thing. But other than that, it was about as good of a storyline as you're going to come up with. You know what I mean? They even brought back the admiral's daughter for the love interest.
Like, I know.
Like they did their homework on this, man. Yep. Don't ruin it by doing another one.
That was great cruise chemistry with Jennifer Connelly. Like, I don't, you know, it's like.
Are they going to ruin that? Like,
I know.
Because like, they were together.
What are they doing with that storyline? Yeah. Are they going to, you know, like insert some drama or I don't know, man.
See, and that was such a good relationship too. Like, you don't want to mess that up.
I know.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
I agree. But you know, they're going to try.
I know.
When a movie makes over $500 million.
And Tom Cruise is the king of the multiple movies, you know?
Yep.
So.
All the Mission Impossible. And I think there's like another Mission Impossible that's supposed to be coming out maybe a year from now. Because like we actually, because like we've never been like, you know, like I've seen the original Mission Impossible and like maybe. I'll say this. I had seen the original. I know I saw the second one, but I hadn't really been like deep into the Mission Impossibles, even though there's like seven of them or something like that now. But because of Top Gun Maverick, we went to see last summer the new, you know, whatever that Mission Impossible. I can't remember if it was Fallout or what it was, but if that was, you know, part one of two, there's another one coming here at some point.
I'm trying to look up like what movies are coming out for Memorial Day weekend and. I am not impressed.
Yeah.
So
something Marvel, movie, something Marvel or DC, I'm sure.
But the Garfield movie and King of the Planet of the Apes.
Wow.
Or Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes.
See, and I've never gotten into the new Planet of the Apes stuff either. I was big on the originals, but
I like the Charlton Heston ones were good. I mean, those were really good. And then they started remaking them, and they started doing some different origin stories. I started watching one of these. Like we were on a trip and I was in the hotel and I'm watching a movie and it was one of these Planet of the Apes movies. And I think it was like an origin type story and I can't keep them all straight, man. Like there's been so many remakes.
I'm just not in on the CGI apes, you know, it's just,
I'm with you. I don't know.
They look too phony to me, even though they're supposed to look more realistic. I'm just not in on it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it. For tonight. Appreciate you being here, Vince. Appreciate everybody else being here as well. We've got a mailbag show coming up tomorrow, and of course, more Ivy Nation sports talk all week long. We'll be here for you. Hit that like button before you leave, and of course, subscribe, rate, review, play your podcast. Do it. Appreciate it. Ivy Nation sports talk.